for purposes of oral argument, and you will only have 10 minutes per side. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Today I'm here on behalf of David Brockemeyer and his corporation, only his wife, who was involved in some of the litigation, and the litigation you recently decided is not a party. This appeal arises from a finding that David Brockemeyer committed an act of contempt and a sentence imposing a penalty for that contempt on both the corporation, Liberty, and David Brockemeyer. The proceedings originated when a double-captioned document entitled Application was filed with the district court. The application was signed by counsel for Skyline Woods Homeowners Association and certain individuals aligned as plaintiffs in the Skyline case. The second caption on the filing identified a separate district court lawsuit in which Paisley LLC was the plaintiff. Counsel for Paisley never signed the application. No affidavit alleging any act of contempt was ever filed in each case. No independent application for findings of contempt was made in the Paisley case. Hearings were held, including a site inspection. The site inspection occurred approximately 7 weeks after the application was filed. The core issue was whether 115 acres of land were mowed suitably under the terms of a stipulation that had been approved by the court. Nothing about the procedure in this case is easy. The date upon which the court approved the stipulation is between two dates, a date in March and a date in August, and on each of those dates, March and August, the district court entered what was announced as a final judgment to be followed from March to August by additional proceedings. So we have these issues present before you today. Number one, is the contempt proceeding entirely invalid because there is no affidavit? Number two, is there a contempt proceeding at all in the Paisley case where findings or sentences, or either in Paisley appropriate? Should Mr. Brockemeyer and the corporation have been ordered to pay fees for counsel in that case? Number three, why is Liberty ordered to pay attorney's fees when Liberty was never found guilty of contempt? Those are the core issues. I'd like to take them in that order and start with the requirement, what we believe you should clarify as a requirement, that contempt proceedings must be prosecuted with an affidavit. As you can tell from looking at the briefs, this court's past decisions have come close to an announcement that an affidavit of contempt is necessary, but it can be argued that there isn't a crisp decision saying that to initiate civil contempt, an affidavit is required.
The affidavit would provide some evidentiary basis beyond a mere allegation that a court order has not been followed.
It would, Your Honor.
In the absence of an affidavit, could that basis be supplied some other means by testimony at a hearing or deposition testimony? Is the form of the proof the affidavit really the point, or is the point that we need some evidence before a court can proceed with contempt?
I think it's two things, Your Honor. The form of the notice is important to the extent that it affects the quality of the notice. But I think one of the reasons an affidavit is necessary is because some document has to inform the accused contemnor that these are the things he or she has done. And that didn't happen here. It wasn't until we got to the hearing that somebody said, we claim you did this and this and this and this. Well, and of course, then you're confronting the witness, so there's no notice.
In this case, you've got the joint stipulation. So everyone knows that the contempt is based upon not following the joint stipulation. Okay.
Your Honor, that is an argument that could be made if one thought that all of the well of authority for this contempt could be drawn from this voluminous record. But the well of authority for this contempt is the application. It's one document, and that's all it is. And we know that one cannot be held guilty of contempt for violating a stipulation. It has to be a court order that's violated. And that the application for contempt ought to inform the contempt defendant, it's this order on this date, and you failed to do these things. And so the first thing is, the person defending contempt is entitled to know. How else do you prepare your defense? The second component is that the quality of the proof that is required to initiate the contempt process, which can result in incarceration, ought to be elevated beyond an attestation of a lawyer that the lawyer has conducted an inquiry. We ought to require some first-party proof. Somebody ought to be able to say, I'm entitled to the child support, and I haven't been paid. Or the records of the state show the child support isn't paid, and not just an application by a lawyer. We don't do that in other parts of our law as a matter of practice. Your decisions have recognized that, and we shouldn't do it in a case just because it's voluminous. This case illustrates why. Here we have two cases not joined, not consolidated, I should say, but joined for proceedings. Here's a man who gets served with a document signed by counsel for one party, and it's double captioned. It says he committed an act of contempt. The application is approved by an order issued in one of the two cases. But he can't tell from the application what's going on here. At the time the application is filed, the district court has said, I've entered final judgment. The final judgment, announced in March, came before this order approving the stipulation in June.
There's two orders on March 31st, aren't there?
There are, Your Honor. But neither of them approves the stipulation. That comes later. So I don't know how it is that, in fairness, we can expect that this person can prepare for a contempt proceeding and know what he's charged with. That confusion, the confusion of not formalizing how we proceed in contempt so everybody, including the court, knows, continues in this combination case. When we show up for sentencing, after the court has found David Brockemeyer alone, not the corporation, guilty of contempt, in the Skyline case alone, Mr. Brockmeyer's counsel is asked if there's any reason why judgment should be pronounced. After the court has called both captions, counsel stands up and says, well, Your Honor, there's no reason why judgment shouldn't be pronounced in the Skyline case, but there's no contempt proceeding in the other case. The court acknowledges that is so, and then in a few moments proceeds to sentence for contempt and impose attorney's fees of $11,000 to be paid to the lawyers who are involved in the case in which the court has just acknowledged there is no contempt proceeding. Had we had an affidavit to start this, signed by somebody who had first-party information, there would have been a case, an order, an act, and a series of events identified that would have brought order to this process that lacks order. We contend that an affidavit is required by the law.
Is your focus on not just an affidavit, but the individual who signs the affidavit due to the fact that there are developments subsequent to the underlying order that have to be brought into court? They won't be reflected by the underlying case, right, that resulted in an order. It's what happened since you were.
Your Honor, I think that is a refinement of Justice Stephan's question, which I don't think I answered, or I don't think you would have asked it, so I'm going to try again. My problem is in two parts. I think the identity of the person signing is important. The declarant should have first-party knowledge. The evidence should be quality evidence that is appropriate for an affidavit, and it should not be the lawyer saying, I swear the client told me.
But it's going to be knowledge of the underlying proceeding and knowledge of subsequent events?
It has to be something that gives notice to the defendant about what the defendant's defending against. He can go to jail for it. I
you
make an argument in the report.
A better identification of the contumacious behavior.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, the elements of proof of contempt. The existence of a valid order, and it's got to be identified so we can ascertain whether it's valid.
What about the second issue? Is there a contempt proceeding at all?
I think that's a quality question. In the second judicial proceeding, the Paisley judicial proceeding, Your Honor, I don't think that double-captioned affidavit, signed by one of two counsel of record, not signed by anybody else initiated a proceeding there, and I think the district court was right on sentencing day, the district judge didn't intend for there to be a contempt proceeding in that case, but he did impose a sentence there, and we don't think he...
Was the double caption document filed in both cases or just the Skyline case?
It was filed in both, but it was signed by counsel in only one.
In your reference to the court saying there's no contempt here, where would we find that?
I quoted it in my brief. I'm sorry I can't remember the page, but I quoted it in the statement of fact in my brief, Your Honor. The colloquy appears there.
In the second case.
It's actually at sentencing in both cases, but it acknowledges the absence of contempt in the second case. I'll reserve for rebuttal if I may.
Thank you. I'm not sure there's any rebuttal time, but thank you. Mr. Sheritz, good morning.
Thank you. Jim Sheritz on behalf of the plaintiffs in the underlying case. This case involves a situation where there was an application for contempt, and then the court, for reasons that are not completely clear to me, because there was argument about the underlying stipulation entered in front of Judge Randall, which Judge Randall said he approved back in the summer of 2006, that even though the court had issued a ruling on the summary judgment by then, stated that it wanted to see that there was a formal order entered on that underlying stipulation. This contempt effort started and stopped about three or four times before Judge Battalion was comfortable and we could get the defendants to show up. As you look through the summer of 07, there was the application in June, a hearing to be held in early July, then it's set for later July, and then a later time after that. As to due process and notice, if that's the issue that the defendants are asserting, they had plenty of notice what was going on here. There's no question about that. They had the rulings of the court. They had the applications. Certainly the original affidavit, if in fact it did not make it in the record, or even if there was not one, because I was not there at the time, is not the critical issue here. The critical issue is at the time that there's a hearing with proper notice, was there compliance with the court's then-in-effect orders? Now, there's no question when you look at those start-and-stop hearings in July of 2007 that the defendants were on notice that this was a question of whether or not they were complying with the orders of the court. Then they show up, then the evidence comes forward, and you see such things as around page 512, 513 of the Bill of Exceptions, where Mr. Brockmeyer says, oh, I thought that stipulation would only be in effect for 10 days. He's impeached by his own testimony in a deposition in the fall of 06, where he said, yes, I intend to comply with the stipulation. I intend to mow it, take care of the ponds, get the clippings off, water the property, but then shows up at the contempt hearing and said, no, I had no intention of ever complying. Court could have stopped the hearing right there as far as I'm concerned. And frankly, furthermore, as to any technical issues on this contempt, he wasn't incarcerated. We're not here talking about that. We're talking about an imposition of some attorney's fees, which could be done in any hearing, a motion to compel or otherwise as a sanction by the court because of the bad faith and actions by the defendant. There's certainly ample evidence of that. There was a stipulation entered into, ratified by the court, and an order of the court regarding maintenance of this property. And there was a blatant effort by the defendant, Mr. Brockmeyer, to disregard it and announced his intention to disregard it, said he thought it would not be in effect more than 10 days at the time of the contempt hearing when, in fact, in his deposition the previous fall, he had said, yes, I've got the sprinkler running. Yes, I intend to comply with the order. Yes, that was my stipulation. And then he shows up with a contempt with a blatant disregard for his own stipulation and the orders of the court. As a consequence, I think the sanctions, if anything, were too light. They should have been more coercive. There should have been more action taken. And frankly, this also falls along the theme of, I think, the still pending motion for you to slightly modify the order on the primary action, because you essentially went back to the stipulation from the summer of 06 as to the standard, and we said you should at least go back to the standard of Judge Battalion, which is that this be maintained as in a totality to look like a golf course or well-kept lawn. As a consequence, I believe that there's no need for further debate. I'd be happy to open myself up to questions, but I think there's ample notice that the three hearings have started and stopped, and the issue was compliance with the court's orders, and blatantly there was not compliance.
Was the corporation held in contempt before the sanction was ordered?
You know, I can't recall from the order if the corporation was found to be in contempt specifically, as opposed to just the president who owned and controlled and directed the actions. If that oversight occurred by the trial judge, it's not of great significance. It could easily be corrected as a matter of law. But certainly Mr. Brockmeyer was contemptuous in his behavior and his testimony, and the sanction was minimal as a consequence. Any further questions?
So are you conceding Liberty was ordered to pay attorney's fees, and were they not?
I believe that the court said there was contemptuous behavior and then ordered that it would be a joint and several liability of the corporation and Mr. Brockmeyer.
So Liberty was not held in contempt. Are you conceding that Brockmeyer would owe the attorney's fees but not necessarily the corporation?
I think they would both owe it, and I think the court was unfortunately terse in its finding. It made a reference to contemptuous behavior without specifically saying who had done it. But as I said, alternatively, whether this were a motion to compel or a sanction, making him pay attorney's fees for what we had to go through was minor compared to what, frankly, should have happened to him. He's had an ongoing abuse of the orders. He has not cared of the consequences, and this sanction should stand, if not a greater sanction. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't believe we have any time for rebuttal. No time for rebuttal, so we will go to the next case for the day, which is Cook versus Operator.